Track 5, Therapeutic Challenges. On the last track, we discussed the various aspects to keep in mind when including the family in off-hours therapy. Education of the parents, development and understanding of clients' needs for security and reestablishing good self-esteem were discussed. On this track, we will examine various challenges inherent when treating sexually abused boys, such as dependency on physical contact, drastic mood shifts, failure to remember session content, dysfunctional attempts to regain power and control, and premature disclosure of details of the abuse. Also, we will include therapy strategies that address some of these challenges. As you know, young boys frequently request physical contact to obtain a feeling of security. In these cases, as you know, it is important to set limits regarding physical contact while at the same time validating the importance of nurturance and comfort. Danny, age 12, who was callously abused by his babysitter, would constantly follow Charles, Danny's therapist, around during group therapy sessions. Many times he asked to sit on Charles' lap, even though he was 7. To address Danny's overwhelming need to be close to someone, ethical limits needed to be set on physical contact. Keeping in mind that his perpetrator ignored his needs, Charles felt he needed to provide a supportive experience. He reminded Danny of the rule of no physical contact without permission. Charles then made an agreement with Danny that he would give him a hug before and after each group session. In this way, Charles fulfilled Danny's needs for nurturance while still respecting his personal space. Another way might benefit you with overly physically dependent clients is to give them regular pats or hugs of encouragement, but only after request to do so is made. Your opinion may vary regarding physical contact. Then slowly diminish the number of contacts over a number of sessions. As you know, this will tend to make the client less and less dependent on physical contact from an authority figure for security. Another challenge you probably have encountered in therapy with sexually abused boys is when one of your clients experiences dramatic mood shifts, and we've talked about this on an earlier track. As you know, traumatized children can sometimes develop an inability to regulate emotions. As you are aware, without an outlet, these feelings build up until the client releases them with an explosion of activity and emotion. 10-year-old Nicholas was a reclusive, sexually abused client. Generally, Nicholas didn't participate in group discussions and kept an unanimated approach to any play therapy. Finally, in one session, his therapist, William, witnessed Nicholas having an explosion of emotion. He cried and lashed out at another group member. William took Nicholas aside until he calmed down. William helped Nicholas to develop exercises to soothe himself when he feels that his emotions are going to manifest themselves in destructive ways. Some of these exercises included holding a stuffed animal or blanket. Nicholas had a small rubber dinosaur that he named Rex. Creatively venting through drawing, painting, or writing. Repeating or reading calming statements and deep breathing. In this way, Nicholas began to learn how to deal with his emotions on his own without the assistance of a higher authority. In addition to physical contact and dramatic mood shifts, another challenge is that sometimes clients have trouble remembering session content. John, age 11, when his therapist Henry asked him the routine question, "What was your favorite part of today's session?" he responded with, "I don't remember." In some cases, this can be the effect of the trauma. Beverly James reports evidence that memories of traumatic events are processed differently and levels of awareness can fluctuate. However, in John's case, he was using disassociation to cope with the trauma. Some indicators that John was experiencing disassociation and not affective memory loss were: he appeared to be unaware of his surroundings. He would stare off as though in a trance, experiencing frequent withdrawal. He would deny behavior that the rest of the group had witnessed, and he would appear disoriented or confused. While John went through one of his dissociative episodes, Henry would talk to John as though he could hear his therapist until his awareness of his surroundings returned. Henry then explained to John how he was trying to go somewhere safe to cope with what had happened to him, probably. To keep track of his episodes, Henry asked John's parents and teachers to observe John and note any of the above indicators as they occurred. Over the course of therapy, as he began to work through his abuse more successfully, the frequency of the episodes diminished. As you are aware, in group therapy, boys will try to regain their sense of power through dysfunctional ways. Jonathan, a colleague of mine, has observed the following 6 key dysfunctional behaviors in his group sessions: passive-aggressive behavior, manipulation, provocation, ridiculing, scapegoating, and silence. Robbie, age 13, was ridiculing some of the younger boys in the group. Jonathan discussed with the group this behavior immediately after it occurred and identified it as a dysfunctional power and control behavior. He then asked the group to discuss this behavior and how these actions made them feel. Jonathan pointed out the difference between 1, self-empowerment, a positive goal, and 2, exerting control, a negative goal. During this incident, it was vital that Jonathan didn't involve himself in a power struggle in which one boy was right and the other wrong. This, of course, would have split the group and undo much of the trust that had been established. A challenge I have encountered is a client's prematurely disclosing details of the abuse during a group session. In the early stages of group therapy, most boys are not ready to recall the details of their abuse. When one boy takes the initiative to disclose his own details, this can serve to intimidate the other boys. Also, premature disclosure can result in feelings of extreme vulnerability on the part of the boy who shares. To prevent premature disclosure, I involve the boys in activities early in therapy that build rapport, create a safe atmosphere, and clarify the purpose of the group. I ask the group to brainstorm and discuss together the rules with which they are most comfortable. I finalize the rules once they have all agreed. However, I impose a few that were non-negotiable, such as not betraying confidences about what is discussed in the group, no substance abuse, and no hands-on behavior towards other group members. By deciding on their own rules, the group begins to regain their sense of control over their surroundings in a positive manner. In this track, we discussed various challenges inherent when treating sexually abused boys, such as dependent on physical contact, dramatic mood shifts, failure to remember session content, dysfunctional attempts to regain power and control, and premature disclosure of details of the abuse. On the next track, we will examine the effects of male sexual abuse on sexual identity. Question 5. What are some challenges that you may face in your therapy session with sexually abused boys?